Good morning. It's time for In the Green Outdoors with Gail Martin and Carol Kelly. Each week, the ladies will bring you gardening and planting ideas, tell you about native Ohio plants, prairies and habitats, and great tips for everything in the green outdoors. This week with Carol Kelly.
Hello again, everyone. Well, today I thought I'd present a rather old-fashioned topic, that is, spring tonics. But first, let's talk about that wonderful, natural Native American sweetener made from the sap of various trees, especially the sugar maple. All across Ohio, starting in late February and continuing on weekends all through March and even into April, maple syrup festivals are in full swing as the warming weather triggers the rise of sap in trees, awakening from winter dormancy. These festivals often feature costumed interpreters. Some offer hands-on activities, and many provide pancake breakfasts in addition to selling bottled syrup. I hope you have taken, or do plan to take, the opportunity to visit at least one of these gatherings this spring, especially if you have children. Now, of course, Native Americans discovered the uses of maple sap centuries ago, well before European colonists arrived in North America, and they taught the techniques of harvest to the newcomers. There are various legends suggesting how the discovery of maple syrup and sugar came about, but we haven't time to explore those in this brief segment. Again, this is an excellent topic to undertake with kids, since there are plenty of legends to be found online and in books. But did you know that sugar maples are not the only maples from which syrup can and has been made? And furthermore, maples are not the only tree species that have been utilized for syrup making. One wild food foraging website that I found lists 22 tree species that you can tap for syrup production. Now, it takes about 35 to 40 gallons of maple sap to produce a single gallon of syrup from sugar maples. Other trees can require twice as much sap or even more. Well, let's take a look at some of these other trees. Red maple sap is slightly less sweet than that of sugar maple. This species tends to leaf out earlier, bringing an end to the tapping season. Black, red, and silver maples also have been tapped for syrup making. Norway maple, as you may well guess, is native to Europe and is now considered an invasive species throughout much of the United States. The sap is not as sweet as that from sugar maples. There also are various western U.S. maple species that may be tapped. Box elder trees, botanically, are included in the maple family. Its syrup can be brighter in color, nearly orange, and the taste profile ranges from butterscotch to citrus. Sycamores are widespread and easily can be identified, even in late winter. The sap of this species boils down to a light yellow color and is flavored with hints of honey and peanut brittle. Black birch is most popular for its use in making birch beer, but also may be tapped for syrup. Paper birch is not found much in Ohio, since it prefers colder climates, so is more widespread in the northern regions of Alaska, Canada, and Russia. It takes up to 100 gallons of this sap to create a gallon of birch syrup, but the final product is regionally popular in marinades, sodas, and baked goods. It has a lower sugar content than the sugar maple, less than 1%, but is the sweetest of the birch trees. Yellow, river, and gray birches all are candidates for tapping, as is the European white birch. As the name implies, that last tree is native to Europe, but just as so many other plants, has been introduced here as an ornamental in urban and suburban areas of the United States. Ironwood, hop hornbeam produce a sap later in the spring, and the sugar content and volume are even much less than those from birch trees. Many people know that black walnuts offer up a good crop and potential dye, but they also are a source of syrup. The sap tends to flow at a slower rate, but when boiled down, the syrup has a strong flavor with more earthy nuttiness than the sweetness of maple. Shagbark hickory syrup has regional appeal mostly in the east. Unlike other syrups made from sugar maples and other trees, it is not the sap that is used. A tea or infusion is made of roasted hickory bark and sugar. The finished hickory syrup that I have had tasted good, but as a maple syrup substitute, I'd consider it more of a poor man's maple syrup. It's less tasty than maple, and it can be something useful to make in years when the trees aren't producing enough nuts to gather, though, since bark always is available. If you are interested in making your own, again, the method is described online. And now, to segue into today's other spring-themed topic, at least one maple syrup festival that I know of, sassafras tea also is sold, either to drink there or to take away. So what's the idea behind a spring tonic? Well, long before European colonists arrived, those same maple tree-tapping Eastern and Midwestern Native Americans used the roots, bark, leaves, new shoots, and pith from the branches of sassafras for a wide variety of purposes, including medicinal ones. Infusions made from the bark of the roots were taken internally as a preventive to ward off fever, as well as a remedy to treat diarrhea, rheumatism, measles, and scarlet fever. An infusion of the entire root was used as a blood purifier and as a dietary aid to help prevent obesity. Root infusions also were used to treat fevers that occurred in women after giving birth, and then also as a wash for eye sores. Decoctions made from roots were used to treat heart troubles. Infusions of the plant were used as a cough medicine, mouthwash, and a gargle for colds. Even the flowers were used as a fertilizer when planting beans, and the plant also has been used to scent soap. In addition to a wide variety of medicinal uses, sassafras was used for construction, furniture making, and other things, including food. The leaves were used fresh as a spice, much like bay leaves, for flavoring meat soups. Leaves were dried and pounded and used as a thickening agent and to add flavor to foods and soups. The powdered leaves gives us the spice that the French called filet, and still is an important ingredient today in Cajun foods such as gumbo. The Native Americans emphasized that the tea never should be taken for more than a week at a time. They didn't know of its constituent, safrole, although somehow they knew of its long-term effects. More about that in a moment. But back to a bit more history regarding sassafras. The name was applied by the Spanish botanist Monardes in the 16th century and is said to be a corruption of the Spanish word for saxifrage, which is a large plant genus but is unrelated to the tree. Our native bee balm, also commonly known as bergamot or Oswego tea, in reference to the use that native tribes made of it, is one of 12 plants in the genus Monarda, named in honor of the botanist. Anyway, in 1578, Sir Walter Raleigh took it from the Virginia colony to England. Sassafras, that is. And by the early 17th century, English ships were sent to the colonies to collect sassafras roots to use in the building of forts and other large structures. These trips became known as the Great Sassafras Hunts. Because of its practical uses, especially its hard wood, sassafras also was one of the first plants traded by the Americans, and by then it also was known for its traditional medical uses. One version, made by the English, called for mixing an infusion of the plant with whiskey, and using that for rheumatism, tapeworms, and as a remedy to purify the blood. Sassafras was touted to cure almost any ailment when used in a tea or tonic, and was a favorite in England. When a rumor started that sassafras helped to stave off old age, as you may well imagine, trade hit a new peak. I referred a moment ago to a caution connected with using sassafras tea. In more recent years, it was discovered that what made sassafras oil so tasty is a chemical compound called safrole. In the 1960s, the FDA banned safrole's use as an additive after a number of tests found that it caused liver cancer in rats and miscarriages in humans. In the 1970s, the sale of safrole-containing sassafras tea was banned. Today's root beer may still contain sassafras root extract. However, any used commercially has been treated to remove the oil which contains the safrole. Safrole also is a natural constituent of a number of spices such as nutmeg, mace, cinnamon, anise, black pepper, and even sweet basil. I cannot imagine anyone using spices or culinary herbs in such quantities and with such frequency for it to be harmful. Safrol also is present in cola drinks. I personally feel safe in drinking a cup of sassafras tea off and on over a few days each year as a traditional welcome to spring. The key, as with any type of food or drink, is moderation. This native tree is a valuable addition to our woodlands as well. The small summer fruits of sassafras are readily eaten by wildlife. Native birds such as quail, wild turkey, kingbirds, crested flycatchers, mockingbirds, sapsuckers, woodpeckers, yellowthroat warblers, robins, waxwings, flycatchers, phoebes, and many other songbirds eat the fruits and disperse the seeds. Black bears, beaver, rabbits, and squirrels also eat the fruit, the bark, and the wood. White-tailed deer browse the twigs and foliage. Other time-honored spring activities include foraging for and eating early greens, such as dandelions and ramps. Both are said to stimulate the digestion and strengthen the body after a long winter. Early spring greens add vitamin C, vitamin A, and minerals to the diet in helping to prevent scurvy. Rhubarb, also known as pie plant, was widely regarded as a spring tonic to aid the blood and the digestive system. Of course, only the stalks of rhubarb are edible. The leaves contain high amounts of oxalic acid, which is toxic in high doses. Cooked and stewed rhubarb was referred to as spring fruit in early cookbooks. Strawberry leaves also have been traditionally brewed into a tea to relieve fevers and expel kidney stones, and the root was used as an astringent. Of course, the berries are a good source of natural vitamin C in spring and any time. Strawberry fruit and leaves both have phytonutrients that help in treating inflammation. The fruit also has antioxidants, which play a role in reducing the risk of cancer. Well, this is Carol Kelly saying, nature has many gifts for us, but perhaps the greatest of them all is the acceptance that we are an integral part of it and can take delight in the wonder, beauty, and gifts of the natural world as we embrace life in the green outdoors.
And there's your show for the week. In the Green Outdoors is a production of WZMO Radio. The show airs Saturdays and Mondays right after the second cup at about 9:30 a.m. If you have a question or comment for Carol or Gail, you can email it to WZMO@roadrunner.com. Thank you for listening.